Conservationist, author, and activist Terry Tempest Williams is in Madison today. She'll be giving a talk at the Nelson Institute at Mills Concert Hall this evening at 7 o'clock on the UW-Madison campus.
An author, she's also known for her work as an environmental activist. We spoke with her earlier today about finding people's voices and bearing witness to the events and places that shape our time. Her latest book is a memoir called When Women Were Birds.
Terry, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Veronica. It's wonderful to be back in Madison.
Well, I want to start off with your latest book. It's called When Women Were Birds. Can you give us a taste of that?
Yes, I'm going to read toward the end. I should say it's a book about voice. My voice rises again and again in beauty within the wonder and awe of the spectacle, an exaltation of larks, the murmuration of starlings, a murder of crows, a parliament of owls. And then in the privacy of truth, there is still the repeating courage of one hermit thrush hidden in the woods, singing between intervals of thunder. It is not in sorrow that I am moved to speak or act, but in the beauty of what remains. An albatross on Midway Atoll, dead and decomposing, is now a nest of feathers harboring plastic from the Pacific gyre of garbage swirling in the sea. We can kneel in horror and beg forgiveness, or we can turn away. But the albatross crying overhead, buoyed up by the breeze, is suspended in air by her vast bridge of wings. She is the one who beckons us to respond. How shall I live? I want to feel both the beauty and the pain of the age we are living in. I want to survive my life without becoming numb. I want to speak and comprehend words of wounding without having these words become the landscape where I dwell. I want to possess a light touch that can elevate darkness to the realm of stars. What is time, sacred time, but the acceleration of consciousness? There are so many ways to change the sentences we have been given. We cannot do it alone. We do it alone. How shall we live? Once upon a time, when women were birds, there was the simple understanding that to sing at dawn and to sing at dusk was to heal the world through joy. The birds still remember what we have forgotten, that the world is meant to be celebrated.
Oh, that is beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And I was struck by a part of that passage. We talk about having to have the courage both to use your voice and not to look away. And I know that's something that you've tried to do very hard in your own life, the twin struggles to locate your voice, to use it, and to refuse to look away, even when there is suffering and pain going on. And I wonder if you could talk about how those two ideas have played out in your own life.
That's such an astute comment. To not avert our gaze, I think that is crucial to being a fully present human being, to be able to accept the contradictions of joy and sorrow in the world we live in. You know, I think of my mother. She, when Brooke and I were married, she gave me a handkerchief. And, you know, I never thought about why. And I think that when we choose to marry ourselves to a person, a place, or an idea, then we also choose to embrace both the joy and sorrow of what it means to be human. And I think that's what my mother was doing with that seemingly simple gesture.
And you have engaged in something I've heard you call ground truthing. And I guess it's another thread of that. It's bearing witness to some of the flashpoints of pain in the world. You went to Rwanda after the genocide. You were in the Gulf of Mexico after the oil spill. Why is it important to you to go to these places and absorb their pain and what's actually happening on the ground for yourself?
You know, I have to say, they weren't choices. They were opportunities. They were invitations. And in the case of Rwanda, Lily Yeh, an artist I admire greatly, out of Philadelphia, who started the Village of Arts and Humanities, asked me to accompany her to Rwanda to be her scribe in creating with genocide survivors in the region of Gisenyi near the Congo to help create a genocide memorial. I said no. She kept staring at me. And I think in that moment, on some very deep level, I knew that my soul and my own spiritual growth depended on that. And I heard myself saying yes. In terms of the Gulf, that was something that came as an assignment from Orion magazine. I was terrified, but I realized again the pelicans that I have come to love at Great Salt Lake in my own home ground were being affected in the Gulf, and I wanted to see that for myself. I think so much of our world now is virtual, and the power of direct experience, of bearing witness, of coming back with a story firsthand matters, and it matters to me as a writer and as an engaged citizen.
And it sounds like what you did in these places is similar to your philosophy. You know, you've talked a lot about how women and the land and health, that it's all of a piece. And so when you go to these places, it sounds like you're not just checking in on something separate. You're checking in on, you know, what's part of all of us as a unified whole. How has that been important to you to think about and to live that philosophy of women and activism and health being so interconnected?
You know, you talk about ground truthing. I don't think we're told the truth. And I will never forget going to the Gulf of Mexico during the oil spill. It was day 100. I didn't realize that until we got there. And I noticed on the front page of the New York Times above the fold right-hand corner, it said 80% of the oil in the Gulf is gone. Nature is absorbing it, no problem. Well, we went out with a barefoot pilot 800 feet above the Macondo Well, and it was anything but gone. For as far as you could see, as wide as you could see, all you could see was oil. And I have not trusted the New York Times or any news agency since, very few. So that's ground truthing to me, to see it with your own eyes, to see the connective tissue, to talk to mothers in Mobile, Alabama. And their instinct was that the Corexit, the dispersant, was harming their children. They were told no. They hired their own chemist. The chemist tested the water. It blew up. You know, those are the stories you don't hear. In Rwanda, we are told that the genocide occurred in the spring of 1994, that in 100 days, 1 million Tutsis were murdered by hand by neighbors, by extremist Hutus. What we aren't told is that that genocide continued far beyond 1994. I first went in 2005, and there were still cars burning, a violence that remained that we turned our backs on. Those are the things that I think require ground truthing. And those are the writers that I pay attention to who are in direct experience speaking from witness.
And what do you do with that knowledge? You're there. Maybe it doesn't jive with what you've seen in the New York Times or you've heard about elsewhere. And you're one voice. What can one voice do?
All I do is listen. And then I try and tell a story that bypasses rhetoric and pierces the heart. You know, I remember when the Gulf War was beginning in 2002, and there was a demonstration, a manifestation in Firenze, in Florence, and I was participating. There were 1 million people in the streets of Florence. We were moving like water. And being cynical as an American, I turned to the young woman next to me from Rome, and I said, do you really think this is going to make any difference? Because in my heart, I thought George Bush is going to go to war. Cheney's going to go to war. What does this matter? And she turned to me and she said, it makes a difference to me. And I've never forgotten that. Change begins one heart at a time. Again, engagement, direct experience, bearing witness.
Well, in Wisconsin here at the moment, we're struggling with a lot of questions about iron mining, about frac sand mining. And as we move through environmental issues like these that have been very divisive and difficult and ongoing, you know, involving natural resources, what advice would you give people and communities and governments to think about?
You know, this is an issue before so many of us. We're experiencing it in Utah and Wyoming. Recently, I was with Tim DeChristopher, who, as you know, spent 2 years in jail as an act of civil disobedience, of protesting illegal leases in Utah. We met with four very brave people who committed civil disobedience in Michigan because of the oil spill there. They are headed toward trial. They could spend many years in jail. You say, what can we do as citizens? I think more and more citizens who see that the quality of our water is at stake because of tar sands development, because of oil and gas, because of fracking, are standing up, rising up, and saying, no, no more. And I think there has to be more of us together in communities that do that. Democracy insists on engagement and numbers matter. Right now, we are seeing a heroic few. I hope that we can see a brave many.
And let's see if we can end where we began, about the power of the voices. We heard about all those birds' voices in the beginning. And I know you think about finding your voice. Do you feel that as an activist and a woman and a citizen in democracy now, have you found your voice?
I think it's an ongoing struggle. I struggle to find my voice every day, even speaking with you, to try and tell the truth, to speak from a place of meaning and integrity. You know, tonight I'm speaking at the Nelson Center at the University of Wisconsin, and it's named after Gaylord Nelson, a man I greatly admire who I had the privilege of meeting at the Wilderness Society. You know, he was a voice in the wilderness talking about population, and that is a subject we still can't speak about. So I'm mindful of the power of his one voice. A senator from Wisconsin who started Earth Day. And that voice continues through all of us. And so I think it's about realizing the world is changing, that we participate in that change, and it behooves us to pay attention.
Well, Terry, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Veronica. Thank you for your voice.
That was Terry Tempest Williams. She's a conservationist, author, and activist, and she's in Wisconsin. She's going to be speaking tonight in Madison at 7 o'clock at the Mills Concert Hall on the UW campus. Her latest book is When Women Were Birds.